Do You Brew Guru? Created by the American Home Brewers Association, the free Brew Guru app delivers sage brewing advice and resources and helps beer lovers save money at thousands of tap rooms, brew pubs, and homebrew supply shops nationwide. Get the Brew Guru app for your phone and follow the path to good beer. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 13th, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. But this week, Steve Wilkes and I sit down during a recent brew day to talk about some recipe formulation basics. Playing with gravity. How big do you want your beer to be? And how substantial do you want it to taste after fermentation? We'll crunch some numbers. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. If you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first. Go to basicbrewing.com, click on our Amazon ad on the right-hand side of the page. It'll take you to Amazon, where you can shop at your heart's content. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show. We greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. We're on Google Play Music, and we're on the iHeartRadio app. And if you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who's done so already. This past Friday, I posted a Basic Brewing video episode featuring my grapefruit juice pale ale. It is a delicious beer. I picked on it a little bit in the video, saying that I didn't think it was quite bitter enough. However, since we recorded that episode, the carbonation level has come up a bit in the bottles, and I think the bite has improved. So in retrospect, I don't know if I would increase the bitterness of the hops, at least not that much. That's the thing about bottle conditioning. You know, sometimes it takes a little more time for a beer to mature, and I've discovered that, especially with my sorghum syrup, Belgian-inspired ale, it was tasty in the beginning, but it's even gotten tastier over the past couple of weeks as the carbonation has improved on that one. Of course, you know, the way it goes, there aren't very many left now. But they're good. Steve and I also shot a segment the other day for his Steve's Brew Shop channel on YouTube. Steve brewed up his Ozark Amber kit recipe. He spells that A-U-X-A-R-C Amber, because he's fancy that way. If you search for Steve's Brew Shop on YouTube, you can find it. We're planning to post more of those kinds of things on his channel, as well as some basic brewing video style videos specifically made for Steve's channel. And we've got one planned with a cherry mead that Steve made that is really tasty. So find the channel for Steve's Brew Shop on YouTube and subscribe, so you'll know when that comes out. And that will also help Steve get a custom URL for his shop if he gets enough subscribers. So please go out there while you're thinking about it, while you're at your computer, go out to YouTube, find Steve's Brew Shop on there, and subscribe to his channel. We are sneaking up on June and HomebrewCon in Minneapolis, and I'm getting excited about that. Steve and I are going to do an old-fashioned road trip and drive up there. HomebrewCon is always an adventure, and we always take the month of June off from posting episodes because of that and family vacations, etc. It's amazing how time flies when you're having fun. I bottled my extract 2-gallon robust coffee porter yesterday. I got 21 bottles out of that batch, and I have to say it is delicious. I used a Maris Otter liquid extract, some brown malt, a little bit of dry malt extract, among some other things. And I put the 60 grams of home-roasted, cracked, not ground, but cracked coffee beans for 5 days in the secondary. And I think I'm happier with the coffee flavor of this beer than any other coffee beer that I've brewed. So real happy about that. I'm looking forward to featuring that on a Basic Brewing video in the future. I'm planning my next batch. I'm always looking forward to the next batch. And I'm planning on my next batch to be an all-grain beer brewed with my electric brew-in-a-bag system from our sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. They're in their new space in Tulsa, and they blew the top out of their GoFundMe goal, and they're starting to redeem the premiums that donors to that campaign will get. And I got my notice yesterday. And taking a look at highgravitybrew.com, their homepage, they have seasonal beer kits up there for spring. There's a Blanche de Gravité, which has a subtle bouquet of spice, citrus notes, aromas of yeast breads, coriander, cloves, and subtle spices. Mm. Or Maison de Ferme Aigre? I took Spanish. I didn't take French. The sour farmhouse ale, a refreshing medium strength, fruity / spicy / sour ale, well hopped with a hint of heat from ginger root. Man, that sounds really good. Or Garde de Beer, an artisanal farmhouse ale from northern France. All those sound wonderful and very fun to brew. Maybe time to take a trip over to High Gravity in Tulsa and take a look at their new space and pick up a kit. You can find more great recipe kits on highgravitybrew.com, as well as a full line of electric brewing systems and controllers at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Well, now let's get to the basics about calculating and predicting gravity. Steve and I first sat down on his deck, but it got windy very quickly. So if the wind and the chimes get to you, hang in there. It gets better. Well, Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James. It's a pleasure to be here on my back deck.
And what are we doing today?
We are doing a video. We're brewing up the Ozark Amber so that folks can see how it's made and take a crack at it themselves.
It's one of your kits
that
people can find at stevesbrewshop.com. Shameless plug. And we're shooting a video on how to make that, and we're also shooting a Basic Brewing video episode on my grapefruit pale ale, and we may, depending on how we feel after that, shoot an episode on my split mead experiment thing. So it's an ambitious day.
It very much is. I'm anxious to see how it turns out.
Me too.
But right now we're in the middle of the 30-minute boil interlude, where we have some time to visit about a email that you received.
That's right. And an email that I'm going to use as a springboard into a conversation that I think that just came upon me like a light shining from above, that this would be an interesting thing to talk about, or an interesting topic to talk about. Here's the letter. It's from Dan G. of Beloit, Wisconsin. Dan says, I have made a Russian Imperial Stout that started at 1.110. So that's 1100 or 1110. Big beer.
Yeah,
I pitched a starter of Safale SO4 as I knew it was a big beer, and one packet wouldn't do it. Full oxygen for 3 minutes, so the beer is now 1030, 1.030 after 10 days. Calculated 10+% ABV. Still a little thick mouthfeel. Should I pitch a champagne yeast to bring it a little lower specific gravity? I intend this to be a first beer in a whiskey barrel. So ideas from you or the listeners. So instead of the listeners, I thought we would take that upon ourselves. So I don't want to address the question right now. I have an outline here that we can go by. And, it's getting breezy.
Yeah. Maybe this wasn't the best idea. Sorry about that.
We might move inside in a little bit. But it actually feels nice. I'm enjoying the cool weather before it gets, you know, stymingly hot. Is that a word?
Well, I call it Kyle Kellum's weather.
That's right.
Yeah, Kyle, our friend Kyle, likes to... His perfect weather is by the time you leave your house till you get into your car, you've broken a sweat.
Yes, and your shirt sticks to you.
Yeah. And not me. Yeah. I don't like that. So, okay. I thought our topic could be playing with gravity.
I've done that.
On the vomit column.
Also known as a diet. I feel a little heavy today.
It's your own specific gravity.
That's right.
To be specific, it's how gravity affects us.
That's right.
Yes, I hear you. Especially after our trip to Canada.
Yeah.
So one of the, you know, talking about recipe formulation, one of the places where I like to start is figuring out the gravity of the beer. Not only the starting gravity of the beer, but the finishing gravity of the beer. And a lot of factors go into both of those. And I thought we could, you know, kind of discuss that and kind of talk about some ways on how we can address that and how we can how we can kind of do some of those things on the fly and how we can kind of develop the character of our beers depending on what we're looking for, using gravity as one of the main points. I mean, is that the way you approach a recipe? How do you approach when you're making a recipe? Where do you start? What's the factor that you start with?
I don't start with gravity directly, but I generally this discussion happens with me with a customer who says, I really want to make a Lagunitas IPA. I really like Lagunitas IPA, or take your beer. So I kind of approach it to begin with a general sense of the beer, but gravity comes into it very quickly. So first I'm kind of after, so how strong do you want your beer to be, meaning how much alcohol? How much hops do you like? What do you like about hops? You know, I try to get some sense of what they're really after. The best way to get an answer on that is for them to tell you what kind of beer they buy. Mm-hmm. Then you have a real sense of it. So in that discussion, within about 30 seconds, gravity really comes into it, because you can't address the ABV without that. But you also, you know, if you want a big, chewy beer, there's a lot of unfermentables in there. And so all of that plays.
Yeah. The character of the malt to begin with, depending on the style. You know, if it's an English beer, you may want to go toward Maris Otter or an English, you know, pale malt.
Right.
If it's a German Pilsner, obviously you want Pilsen malt. So that's maybe, you know, number one. But second is how much.
How much?
You know, how much of that grain are you going to put in the hopper?
Right. Exactly.
So here's one easy way that. And we have in front of us a copy of Designing Great Beers by Ray Daniels. We started brewing in the days before brewing software. So at least, before it was on our phones, and, you know, we didn't use brewing software. We used, yellow legal pads, as I've said on the show, and using Designing Great Beers as a resource for that. He's got lots of formulas having to deal with, you know, figuring out original gravity and figuring out IBUs and such as that. So it's a great resource. Nowadays, a lot of people use brewing software to come up with this stuff. You just feed in a bunch of you put in 10 pounds of two row into the calculator, and it shows you what your starting gravity is going to be, and then you throw some specialty grains in there. So it kind of adds it all up for you. But in my opinion, if you really want to get, and that's real handy to do.
Oh, yeah.
But in my opinion, if you really want to get a feel on recipe formulation, you got to know what's going on in those calculations. You got to know what's going on behind the scenes. Do you agree?
I do. Although, to be honest about it, I use the brewing software. I mean, you know, just as a day-to-day course. But you're right. If you don't have a sense of what it's going to do and have a sense of what the ingredients are going to do to the beer, even forget about flavor for a minute, but if you're talking about throwing in, a pound of 120 crystal, what does that do to the gravity? And you really do need to know that.
Yeah, the IBU calculator is another one that I use quite a bit, kind of on a standalone basis. Okay, so let's talk about gravity points. One way that you can calculate your starting gravity, or estimate your starting gravity, is by using gravity points. And gravity points are determined by 1 pound, and we're going to use, we're going to stay away from metric on this one because it'd just be completely confusing if we tried to switch back and forth. But gravity points are determined by 1 pound of ingredient in 1 gallon of water. Say, for instance, base malt. The theoretical, if you were to get 100% efficiency on base malt, 1 pound of base malt in 1 gallon of water would give you a wort of 1037, or 1.037.
And so that's 100% efficiency.
Right.
Okay.
Which you can only do in the lab, really. So that would be 37 gravity points for that 1 pound of base malt. Because 1037s have one pound in 1 gallon gives you a wort of 1037, 37 gravity points.
Right.
Actually, depending on your efficiency, let's say you get 75% efficiency, your actual gravity points would be around 1027, 1028, because you take 75% of that potential. So, for a pound of base malt in 1 gallon of water, figure around 27, 28 gravity points. So, does that make sense so far?
And this is liquid, this is syrup.
No, this is base malt.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I got my.
I'm glad you're here.
Well, yeah, because my mind was still on the
extract.
The extract that we're making.
Right.
So I just wanted to make sure I knew what I was talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
So, so base malt. Got it. 1028. 1 pound of base malt grain.
Great.
Mashed into 1 gallon of water. Liquid extract. You put a pound of liquid extract in 1 gallon of water, you're going to get a wort of around 1037. Now, that's going to differ on the manufacturer, but 1037 is about what you're going to get. So 37 gravity points for liquid extract. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. So dry extract is more because you don't have the water in there to dilute the sugars. So dry extract is going to be around 45 gravity points per pound. So 1 pound of dry malt extract in 1 gallon of water, you get a wort of 1045, so 45 gravity points.
Got it.
Now, specialty malts and adjuncts are going to be all over the range here. And in cheating and looking at designing great beers on page 31, follow along in your hymnals, you get corn, 1 pound of each of these in 1 gallon of water. Corn, 1037 to 1039. Oats, 1033. Rye malt, he says, 1029. That may be a little low in my experience, but wheat, 1037 to 1040. Then there is cane sugar, which is 1046. Corn sugar, 1037. Honey is anywhere from 1030 to 1035. So each of these ingredients, each of these other ingredients that go into the fermentables are going to have other gravity points. So does it all make sense to you so far, Steve?
It's clear as that wort boiling on my stove.
So far, okay. All right, so that's where we get our gravity points.
Yeah.
So what are we doing there? So how do I figure that to make a recipe? If we have, for instance, if we want to make a beer, and we might want to go inside.
Let's
it's
go
getting
inside.
Windy.
Don't take a pause.
Beat up the microphone. This is to all those complimentary emails about the wind chimes.
Jeez.
You can stop writing them.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay.
All right.
All right. So if we want to make a beer of around 1055 starting gravity, 1.055 starting gravity, so that's a moderate beer. How do we get there? And so that's part of the recipe formulation, is how do you add up these ingredients to get that starting gravity? If you use 10 pounds of base malt, and remember, each pound of base malt is going to have 27 gravity points. So 10 pounds of base malt, 10 times 27 is 270. So 270 total gravity points from 10 pounds of base malt.
Okay.
Okay. So if you want to brew 5 gallons, you divide 270 by the amount of the volume that you want. So 270 divided by 5 is your starting gravity. So 10 pounds of base malt, that's 27 points per pound, mm-hmm. times 10 pounds, 270, divided by the 5 gallons, right. you get 54 points. So in other words, your starting gravity for a 5-gallon beer using 10 pounds of base malt is around 1054. 54 gravity points translates to 1054 starting gravity.
Right. And that's at 75% efficiency.
Right. It could be more, it could be less. Right. That's the thing with mashing, with using all grain, is that there are more variables.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that you have to do. I think you have to brew several times until you get your system and your how you brew dialed in, because mm-hmm. this is all theoretical. Mm-hmm. You might get a better efficiency than that in your system, and you might get a little worse than that. But right. you're probably going to be pretty darn close. There's not going to be a giant range here. But if you're really trying to dial it in exactly, the best way to know that is to brew and brew and brew again.
And, of course, if you collect a little bit more wort, the gravity is going to be lower. If you that's collect right. less wort, it's going to be higher.
But that's when you get into, not to digress, but that's when you get into, if you've collected more wort than you want and the gravity is a little low because of that, then you boil it off.
Right, right. Which is the second part of the conversation.
Yeah, but. Sorry.
Spoiler alert. Okay, so let's run down some more ingredients. 6 pounds of dry malt extract, and remember there's 45 gravity points per pound. 6 times 45, 270 again, mm-hmm. so we don't have to do the math again. 270 divided by 5, 54. So 6 pounds of dry malt extract would give you starting gravity in 5 gallons of 1.054. So it's the same, essentially, and I've found that that's a pretty reliable substitution mm-hmm. to go from. You know, if I brew a pale ale with 6 pounds of dry malt extract, it's basically the same beer as if I brewed it with 10 pounds of base malt.
Gotcha.
Now, liquid malt extract, it comes in these, most of it comes in these 3.3 pound cans, which is what, 1.5
liters?
Kilograms?
Yeah, kilograms. Yeah,
1.5 kilograms. Yeah. So that's an odd number. So 3 pounds. So if we take two of those packages, we have 6.6 pounds of liquid malt extract. We multiply that times the gravity points of 1 pound, which was 37, if you remember. Mm-hmm. So 37 times 6.6 pounds is 244.2. You divide that total number of gravity points by 5, mm-hmm. and you get 48.84. So you would get a 5-gallon batch of beer with those 2 cans of malt extract, starting gravity of around 1048, 1049, mm-hmm. something like that. So that's a little low.
Yeah, it is. And that's interesting and pertinent to what's being brewed right now on the stovetop, because it's 6.6 pounds of amber mm-hmm. Syrup and specialty grains. The specialty grains only add about 1 gravity point to it. Mm-hmm. And so it's a 1049 beer.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, for that style that you're doing, it's
yeah.
great. But if you have a recipe and you're shooting for a certain target, as one of your customers the other day was coming in, and he wanted to brew a beer, a small batch of beer, with one of those canisters of the Pilsen Light extract, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted it to be a little higher gravity, and we used this formula to help him figure out how much extra stuff to add to bring his, you know, to reach that target gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to add 1 pound of dry malt extract to the above, remember the total gravity points from 6.6 pounds of liquid malt extract was 244.2.
Mm-hmm.
So you add 1 pound of dry malt extract, which has gravity points of 45, you get 289.2 total gravity points. Divide that by your 5 gallons, and you get 57.84. So you'd get a starting gravity around 1057, or 1058. So that's closer to your target. Mm-hmm. So you boost, you're able to mix and match mm-hmm. and boost. So another approach to that is to go a mini mash and add some actual all grain wort to your extract. So if you were to add 1 pound of base malt to that to the number above, that's 6.6 pounds of liquid malt extract. So that's 244.2 plus 27, which is the gravity points from 1 pound of base malt. You get 271.2. Divide that by 5 gallons, you get 54.24, or a 1054 starting gravity. So that's really close to what we wanted in our recipe design. Mm-hmm. So you can mix and match, and the benefit to doing a partial mash, which is what we advised your customer the other day, mm-hmm. is not only do you hit the gravity points that you were wanting to, you also add some fresh malted grain wort to your beer that, you know, that can help out with, I mean, extract beers are wonderful, but sometimes, you know, they need a little bit of freshness, you know, from some specialty malts or some wort from an all-grain batch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it really, one of the things I like best about beer is that kind of graininess. Mm-hmm. And I do find that an all-extract beer, no specialty grains or mini-mash, is a little one-dimensional for me. So I like to add a little bit of grains, even just steeping grains like the recipe today. It really, really makes the beer shine a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if you're wanting to add some gravity points, a great way to do it would be to do a mash. And it would be easy. You know, you're kind of getting the best of both worlds because you're not mashing 15 pounds of grain and therefore have to have all this extra equipment. You can mash 2 or 3 pounds or whatever, you know, up to a reasonable amount on your stovetop. Just keep it at the 150 or whatever you're mashing at for an hour, and then drain those grains away, and you're good to go.
Yep. Okay, so now to the third part of the first part. using those gravity points in the boil kettle. So gravity of your brew times the volume equals the total gravity points at the start of the boil. So you've got your wort, you've collected it, and say you have a starting gravity of 1045 at the beginning of your boil, and you've got your dipstick out and you've measured that you've got 6 gallons of wort. So 1045, so 45 gravity points times 6 gallons is 270, so that your wort has a total gravity point of 270. So now you can use that to figure out a couple of things. First off, you can figure out what your desired, how much you need to boil off to get to your desired gravity level. For instance, to figure out if you boil down, say for instance, if you went down from 6 gallons to 5 gallons, say you lose a gallon during an hour, mm-hmm. you divide that 270 that you got from multiplying the 45 times the 6 gallons, you divide 270 by 5, and you get 54, or 1054. So if you were to boil 6 gallons of wort that started off at 1045, if you were to boil 1 gallon of that away and go to 5 gallons, you'd have a wort of 1054. So you'd go from 1045 to 1054. So that is an easy calculation that you can do at your brew pot.
Right.
To see where you are. If you take a gravity reading before you start boiling, that gives you a real indication of where you are in your beer so that there's no surprises when you go into the fermenter and say, oh my gosh, you know, either I've got too much beer or it's too strong or it's not strong enough or whatever.
Right. Yep. Yeah, this is just great stuff. Now, one of the nice things, though, about getting a kit that's pre-done, not really trying to sell it, but the point is that the kits are set up that if you use the right volumes of water, et cetera, you're going to get it. But this is great if you wanted to come into, you know, my shop or anybody's shop and say, hey, I want to make something. This is what you go through to determine how to put your ingredients together. It's great.
Okay, so there's another way that you can use these gravity points. Say, for instance, the other day, you remember we were making that Russian Imperial Stout, And it wasn't the volume of beer that we were concerned about. It was the gravity of the beer, because it's going to be blended in with other beers in other batches mm-hmm. from other brewers and put in this barrel.
Right.
So we started off with our gravity points at the beginning of the boil, and we figured how much we were going to have to boil off to reach our starting gravity. So in that case, if you have a target volume or target gravity of, say, 1050, you divide your 1070, or 270 rather, which is your total volume or your total gravity points, divide that 270 by 50, or 1050, your target gravity, mm-hmm. and you get 5.4, which is the amount of gallons that you want to have at the end of your boil. So 270 divided by 50, which is your target gravity, mm-hmm. equals 5.4, or the amount of gallons that you'll have at the end of your boil. So that's a calculation that you can easily do with gravity points around the kettle. And I do this a lot, you know, because I always take a starting gravity and a starting volume. Mm-hmm. And so I can kind of in my head, if I'm coming up with a new recipe, or if I'm working with a new recipe, I can kind of figure out where I'm at the start of that boil, so I can figure out where I'm going to be at the end. You know, I can think of my targets.
Sure. And, you know, there's a practicalness here that I want to talk about, and that's pre-measuring your pot, knowing where those markers are. All this is wonderful, but if you don't know where 5 gallons is in the pot, then it's of no use. So it's a really good idea to pre-measure just with some cold water and make a mark somehow. And you can also take a dipstick, maybe an old racking cane that's got a little crack in it. You don't want to use it anymore. You can mark it off. You can put a notch in it. There's all kinds of ways to mark it. But the idea is that you know where 1 gallon is, 2 gallons are, 3, 4, 5, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I use a white plastic spoon. And I've marked it with a Sharpie, you know. You got to keep in mind, though, that hot water is going to take up more volume than cold water.
That's right.
So there's some fudging that you got to do. And through experience, you can figure it out.
Yeah, and the stick will only work in that particular pot.
Right.
Yeah, you can't get a different pot, because it's going to be different.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And in fact, I do have like three different dipsticks, and it's always a challenge to remember which one is for which pot.
I used to say that about my students.
had three different dipsticks. If your class is full of dipsticks.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's talking about gravity points, and that's a lot to digest. And this may be an episode that you want to listen to again and take notes or whatever. But so let's talk about, we're talking about original gravity. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about final gravity, and that's where the question from Dan comes in, I think. There are several factors that determine your final gravity, and a lot of it depends on wort fermentability. Because you can have a wort that is more fermentable that's going to finish at a lower gravity. You're going to have a wort that is less fermentable that's going to finish at a higher gravity. And there are several factors that will go into that. So just knowing your original gravity doesn't mean you know for sure what your final gravity is going to be. And sometimes your brewing software is not going to tell you that.
That's right.
Any more thoughts on that?
No.
I didn't want to cut you off.
No, but that's exactly right. And so you think you're going to finish it. You know, your brewing software may tell you you're going to finish at 1017, and you're done at 1022 or something like that. And you're really done, but I'm sure you're going to illuminate that thought.
Yeah, yeah. Dan said he started at 1.110, 1110, which was a huge beer, and he said that he finished, or the gravity after 10 days was 1030. So 1030 is a session beer if you yeah. starting gravity for a session beer.
Exactly.
So, but depending on the style, like a Russian Imperial Stout that finishes at 1030. Maybe just fine.
That's right.
So let's take a look at some of these factors on wort fermentability. So all grain brewing, there are several factors that determine your fermentability.
Which one would you say is the max factor?
Make up!
I go with Max Klinger, but that's another... It's because I'm wearing paisley today. Okay, on to section 9 of the or section 8. Is it section 8 or 9?
Section 8.
Yeah, okay, all right. Sorry. Yeah. Okay, all grain brewing and wort fermentability, there's the mash temperature, mm-hmm. which if you mash lower within the sacrification range, you're going to get a more fermentable wort. If you mash higher, you're going to get a less fermentable wort, and that has to do with the enzymes that you're putting into work there. So mash temperature, mash thickness, I've read has a lot to do with wort fermentability, but I've done some really thin mashes with brew in a bag, and I don't see the impact that, you know, that's talked about.
I haven't experienced that either.
So mash temperature, mash thickness maybe, and mash time. Mm-hmm. You know, if you let the enzymes work on your mash for a longer period of time, you're probably going to get a more fermentable wort. With extract brewing, there's more variables that you can't control because the fermentability of your extract is built in by the manufacturer. The manufacturer has made that wort, and they've taken either most or all of the water out of it, and so you'll have a set amount of fermentable sugars in there, and unless you use some kind of enzymes or something to work on those to break those down, that's what you got. And it may vary greatly between the manufacturer and the type. Like, for instance, I looked up on the Brees website. They're pretty easy to find. The PDFs are pretty easy to find on their liquid malt extract. And their Pilsen Light liquid malt extract is said to have a 75% fermentability, mm-hmm. which is pretty high.
Yeah.
It was harder for me to find other numbers on the web, so I went to page 15 of Designing Great Beers. And this was written originally in 1996, so I don't know how up-to-date this is. But, like, for instance, Northwestern light unhopped malt extract had a fermentability of 57.1%. Munton and Fissons light syrup, 57.5%. Munton and Fissons... This must be what Munton's used to be called.
Yeah.
Spray-dried, light, 59.5% fermentability. John Bull, unhopped light syrup, 60%. So those are really...
It's a lot lower.
It's a lot lower fermentability.
Yeah. I'm surprised at those numbers, actually.
And they may have changed over time, because, like I say, this book was written in 1996, but it gives you an indication that some of the extracts out there, at least historically... are not that fermentable. And so for a lower gravity beer, you might not notice it as much, and that may be why they're so unfermentable is because they are designed in these kit and kilo kits, mm-hmm. and you're going to be adding sugar to those
right.
anyway, and that's going to add to your fermentability. So if you were to make an all-extract beer with those, you may wind up with a sweeter end product.
Yeah, or, well, maybe, yeah. Okay, I was thinking about adding sugar. That'll ferment out, but it's the unfermentables. That's very interesting, and I wonder how much it has changed. It'd be really interesting to go back and do a little, get some updated numbers or even do some experiments ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, the Brees number, 75%, you know, that's more along the lines of an all-grain
mm-hmm.
batch.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's kind of a more modern example. So let's talk about the impact of wort fermentability. If you've got a 1050 wort and it's 80% fermentable, you'll wind up with final gravity of 1010. So 1050 to 1010, that's 80% fermentable. 1050 to 1013 would be 70%. So... the difference between a final gravity of 1010 and 1013, not that much.
Mm-mm.
So for a 1050, so for a moderate gravity beer, wort fermentability is not going to be as impactful. However, if you have a wort at 1.100, which is close to what Dan had,
mm-hmm.
if your wort was 80% fermentable, it would go down to 1020.
Right.
If it was 70% fermentable, it'd go down to 1030. So
yeah.
The more gravity that you start with, the more impact that wort fermentability is going to have at the end. So those final gravity numbers are going to be, or there's the gap is going to widen pretty quickly. Now, I don't know what Dan, what his ingredient list was as far as crystal malts or things like that that we talked about, where you can add, or actually we haven't talked about that yet, but crystal malts and specialty grains, you can decrease the wort fermentability to add more body later in the process. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of that he added, but I think that SO4 starting at, you know, 1.110 and ending at 1030, that's like 70%, 70-something percent fermentability. I think that's doing pretty good, and especially ending at more than 10% alcohol.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. I mean, once you've hit 10% alcohol in that beer, that's pretty high. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, SO4 is, the yeast is going to kind of finish. It really won't tolerate alcohol much stronger than that. I don't know the numbers, so I can't speak to it exactly. But I do know that the yeast will only tolerate a certain amount of alcohol. And that's why people want to go back and put champagne yeast into beer sometimes, because it'll tolerate up to about 18% alcohol, where SO4 just won't. So it may be that the beer really has finished.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Dan was asking, you know, remember, should he pitch champagne yeast in there to bring it down? It's my opinion. I mean, I asked him in a following email, how does it taste? And he said it tasted good. So I think I would be happy with that.
Yeah.
Because number one, I would be afraid that the champagne yeast would dry it out too much.
See, that's what I would be afraid of too, that it would dry it out and maybe thin it out some.
Right.
And with a beer style like this, that thick, chewy breadiness is important to the style. And so if you introduce a yeast that's going to really take that all the way out to the maximum amount of alcohol, therefore making the beer more thin, I think that that's the greater sin.
Mm-hmm.
I just wrote a country and western little song. Get that on tape.
A country imperial stout.
That's right.
So, and then also he said he was going to transfer this beer into a whiskey barrel.
Ah.
So there may be some residual whiskey in there, mm-hmm, that will further dry out the beer as well, or lower that, you know, the impact of that final gravity. So I say the long and short of that is I'd leave that beer alone.
Yeah, I would leave it alone, just especially if it tastes good now. It's good to go.
But, however, if you're going to do like a double IPA that starts off at like 1100, or a triple, you know, whatever the style guideline says, you don't want an IPA to be syrupy sweet.
No.
So what are some ways to increase your wort fermentability? First of all, you can add some more fermentable ingredients like sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar is gonna ferment out to basically nothing.
Right.
And so if you add sugar like Russian River does with their Pliny, they add some sugar in with their double IPA to dry out the beer so that there's not any kind of syrupy sweetness there to conflict with the hops. So you get a high gravity beer and you work on the fermentability of the wort by adding sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't have a lot of the residual sweetness left over. For an extract beer, do a partial mash. So if you have an extract that is less fermentable, you can cut that by doing a partial mash and mash low with that mash so that it's more fermentable.
Mm-hmm.
Mix that in. You get the added bonus of having not only a more, you know, sort of authentic, you know, all grain taste, you also work on the residual sweetness of those extracts if you're going to brew a big extract beer. And then different yeast strains, as we said, you know, different yeast strains are going to, you know, the Belgian yeast are going to have a higher alcohol tolerance and champagne, you know, I think champagne yeast is like a last resort kind of a thing with beers, in my opinion. But
yeah, mine too. A high gravity yeast that I like is just the Nottingham, the Danstar Nottingham. It really tolerates alcohol well and really works great in these big beers like this. So yeah, just, you know, choosing the right yeast to begin with can answer a lot of those issues.
And then on the other end, if you're doing a low gravity, starting gravity beer, if you don't want it to be too dry, if you don't want it to be too watery, there are ways to increase the body of a beer And that is to add ingredients like specialty grains. You know, crystal malts have unfermentable sugars built into them. So if you add some crystal malt in there, it'll add some sweetness. And depending on the level of toaster that you have or the color of that, it can add some other interesting flavors as well. And then in my experience, malted rye. I mean, you know, malted rye is slimy and, you know, the work that you get from that. It has a substantial amount of body left over in it. So you were talking about, before we started recording, a customer came in who said that he had a beer that was he called it watery. Talk about that story.
Well, about 6 or 8 weeks ago, somewhere along that line, a customer came in, a new brewer, and they had brewed once or twice before, ever. And he wanted to brew a porter and asked if I could help him develop a recipe. So we did. And I used my brewing software and really discussed with him what he wanted the beer to be like. And so we arrived at a recipe, which he brewed. And he came in last Saturday, so a couple of days ago, and he said to me, the beer was good, it tastes great, but it seems watery. And I said, questioningly, you know, it's like, you know, that beer shouldn't have been watery. It shouldn't be watery. And so we had a pretty good talk about what we're really getting at. And it turned out, at least in our discussion, that what he really wanted so 2 months ago, what he really wanted was really an imperial stout. Mm-hmm. He really wanted a thick, chewy, really substantial beer. And so a little bit, I won't call it miscommunication, but he came in asking for a porter, and I gave him a porter recipe. Not a porter wagoner, but a,
too many sparkles.
Too many sparkles, that's right. So, you know, we worked up a porter recipe, which is a different beer than a stout, and much different from an imperial stout. So the recipe we landed on for his next batch really was a Russian imperial stout in terms of how you classify it. And I feel like he'll be much happier with that beer. Now, don't get me wrong. He didn't dislike the beer. It just wasn't what he expected. And we didn't communicate as well as maybe we should have. But what I asked him to do was, it's only been in the bottle for about a week, he said. And I said, well, let it go one more week and bring a bottle in and we'll share it and we'll talk about it. And the nice thing about this is that helps me as his local homebrew shop dealer. It helps me know him as a customer and really know what he really wants. And then I can use that knowledge to really help him get a recipe together that he really wants to do, and that we really have a common talking place. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think of porters as being watery,
right.
But if you compare that to, you know, Oscar Blues Tin Fitty,
yeah.
It's pretty watery.
Compared to a milkshake, it's watery.
Yeah, exactly. So it was an interesting discussion, and one that is exactly pertinent to the topic today of how to design a recipe that meets your needs and your wants. And so, you know, from my side of the fence, having a common place to talk from is very helpful. And then for the customer to come in and have a decent idea of what it is that they really want is very helpful.
Well, thank you, Steve. I hope that this discussion has been helpful to brewers out there.
I've learned a lot.
But I think that, I mean, you know, playing with gravity is very important in recipe development and recipe design and design. And if you can know what's happening behind that brewing software, if something happens that's different from what you're expecting, maybe now you'll have kind of a clue, at least, of how to approach it and figure it out. Well, thank you, sir. We're about ready for the next hop edition on the beer.
I believe we are, so we better hop on over there.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, James.
Well, thanks again to Steve. A very fun and productive day. And I hope that discussion was helpful to you, whether you do your figuring with a pencil and paper or use brewing software to formulate your recipes. It's always good, in my opinion, to know what's going on behind the scenes, so you can get a better feel about how things are going. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. You can get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our log books where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all those out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We greatly appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Honest Outfitters Single Camping Hammock and Bread Revolution World Class Baking with Sprouted and Whole Grains, Heirloom Flours, and Fresh Techniques. You know, sprouted grains, wouldn't that be malted grains? That sounds tasty. And thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo at our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Till then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.